welcome to All God's Creatures Pet Podcast. I know, it's been a while since our last podcast, but I've had some major changes in my life, and I've been preoccupied with that. First, me and my husband are expecting our first baby, so that's pretty exciting. And secondly, we moved from Georgia to Florida and had to say goodbye to all of our clients from Georgia and start developing a clientele here in Florida. So that's what's been going on with us. But on with the show. I'm really excited about today's show. We're going to talk to Amy Kerwin, the president of an all-volunteer organization called Primates Incorporated. Primates Incorporated advocates the retirement of lab primates and monkeys to a peaceful setting. But let's hear more about that from Amy. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Why don't we start by having you explain exactly what Primates Incorporated does?
Sure. Well, we started about 4 years ago while I was working in a primate laboratory myself here at the University of Wisconsin. I started working there to get into veterinary school, but obviously I got sidetracked because I worked with 95 monkeys for 5 years, and I grew close to them, got to know their personalities. And there were about 500 monkeys in my building and 1,500 monkeys across the way, so 2,000 total at the university.
Wow.
And none of them were being retired at all. However, when I was communicating on forums with other researchers from other facilities, they were talking about retiring their primates and what sanctuaries to retire them to. And so I thought if I started a nonprofit organization in Wisconsin that we could raise funds to build a sanctuary here, start retiring out-of-state research monkeys already being retired, and then create a culture of primate retirement locally so that researchers within the university system who desire to retire their monkeys after they're done in the study would have a way to do so, and it would be in close proximity to them. And so right now we are still looking for land, and we've been advertising for land donations, but you know, with the economy and everything like that, it just doesn't seem like someone is going to hand over their land to let us build. So we're raising like $50,000 to be able to purchase 5 to 10 acres. We want to be surrounded by a lot of farmland and sort of be out in a peaceful country. And then the cost of the building will be $300,000 just to build this indoor-outdoor facility. And we have a contractor working on that right now on the plans. And actually where we are right now, we've been holding annual fundraisers, and we're at about $6,000. So, you know, we have a long way to go, but we've been, you know, writing grant proposals and grant inquiry letters and submitting them every month. And rejection is high, to be quite honest. And I think the reason is that we're raising funds for building. We don't have animals yet. We can't put a face to the cause. And, you know, many foundations that do fund for animals, it's more for pet and or dog and cat adoptions and spaying and neutering programs, and not really for monkeys themselves.
Well, that's, I think, because they're not in the limelight. People don't know a lot about lab primates.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah,
you know, we've got a lot of rich people out there that definitely want to donate some money and, you know, get it off of their taxes, get a exemption. But so you know that if they hear more about it, like through podcasts like these and radio interviews, then hopefully they'll want to donate more money and you can get the funds you need.
Yeah, I'm very appreciative that, you know, All God's Creatures is willing to have me on to talk about this, because it is an issue that is very close to me, and I know that other people would feel the same way. So.
Yeah. So you are familiar with a day in the life of a lab primate, right?
Yes, I resigned from the laboratory about 3 years ago to volunteer more for Primates Incorporated and focus my energies on that. However, in the laboratory, I guess if I just give you an example, you know, it varies depending on what study the monkey is involved in. And in university settings, the studies that they're involved in can vary from psychology studies to more invasive studies of disease and Parkinsonian condition type studies or simian AIDS research. And those are typically terminal studies, but the behavioral studies where they're studying maybe depression or mother or offspring of alcoholic mothers, those studies typically aren't terminal. And then you have the pharmaceutical testing, and actually in Madison, there's another pharmaceutical contract testing laboratory that has 2,000 monkeys here in Madison, and actually all of those studies are terminal. They do drug toxicity testing, and then they euthanize the monkeys and look at their tissues. So, you know, there's a large percentage of terminal studies that where the monkeys would never have a chance for retirement. But there's 50,000 monkeys in research laboratories across the United States. And so if we even focused on retiring 10% of them, that would still be, you know, 5,000 monkeys that we could potentially retire. And so when I worked at the laboratory, I worked with the rhesus monkeys, which are typically the most popular research primate. And the rationale behind that was simply the people that trained me said that they were the most resilient. They could handle stress and adapt to new environments fairly well. And so the laboratory I worked in, we bred 50 monkeys per year. And so the female monkeys would be put into a cage with a breeder male for 3 days. And then they hopefully would become pregnant. And then when they have the baby monkey, the baby monkey was then weaned from the mother at 6 months. And then they were put into a group of about 4 to 6 other young baby monkeys. And they were allowed to live in a group setting until about 2 years of age. And at 2 years of age, then they were paired off with one of the monkeys in that group. And then they're put into a much smaller environment. It's basically two cages that are joined together, 4 feet long by 2 feet tall, by 2 feet in depth. So you're looking at, you know, eight square feet in the bottom of the cage, and the pair of monkeys basically live in that home cage about 98% of the time they're there. And then if a research procedure were to occur, you would remove the monkey, separate them off, remove the monkey, bring them to another room where the testing would occur. And again, the testing varies depending on the type of study. And then they're put back with their partner. And you can imagine day in and day out, this is the environment they live in. And then basically when I would get to work in the morning, our monkeys were in 3 different rooms, housed about 40 monkeys per room. And I would bring raisins up to them and sort of look them over from head to toe and make sure there were no injuries, no one had diarrhea, and make sure that everyone was okay for the day. And then they would all get fed by animal care, and feeding actually varies between laboratories. We were talking about this on a forum one time. Some labs were feeding their monkeys twice a day, which definitely I'm an advocate for. And the main reason that I felt so strongly about feeding them twice a day is that we were only feeding our monkeys once a day, and the male monkeys would literally eat their entire ration of monkey chow in less than 15 minutes. And so they had basically the entire day and night until they ate again. And so you would imagine every morning they would gorge their food then because they're so hungry. And anyways, in the afternoon, each primate would get either a quarter piece of fruit, a handful of peanuts, or ice as an enrichment. And so we had sort of, vary it. So, it's called primate enrichment in the laboratories, trying to keep them busy to minimize the amount of abnormal behavior which is happening. And out of the 96 monkeys that I worked with, I'd say the majority of them showed some form of abnormal behavior, which is to say they're either pacing or backflipping from boredom, sucking on their fingers, even to more severe forms that occurred in less of the monkeys, but still severe, where they would bite their arm or they would pluck their fur out and eat it. And I guess all of this is a result of the effects of living in this constant captive environment. And so, even if the monkey is untouched by research most of the time, living in this species inadequate environment is obviously stressful for them and makes them resort to abnormal behaviors. And so when you're talking about retiring them, there's many different viewpoints and criticisms that I've received about, why prolong that type of life. If they have abnormal behavior and they're plucking out their fur and eating it, that's not a very good quality of life. Why bother even trying to give them more space, because they're not going to get rid of this abnormal behavior. That seems to be sort of the mentality. But lucky for me, I've been networking with other primate sanctuaries throughout the United States, and they have retired monkeys with this abnormal behavior, and they have told me that the abnormal behavior, once a monkey is put into an environment where there's not stress-inducing procedures, it's more spacious, there's more monkeys around, more vegetation, a completely different setting, that the abnormal behavior actually disappears to almost nothing or disappears totally within 3 months. Now, the problem is that this isn't documented. And so at Primates Incorporated, we would have constant video surveillance of the monkeys. And I would like to have students and volunteers watch this behavior on the videos, and social score, in a sense, measuring the behavior of rehabilitation so that we can report on our rehabilitation and socialization successes and show that these monkeys, once given a more spacious and enriching environment, can be rehabilitated and be allowed to live out the rest of their life in a more peaceful setting.
And you plan on feeding them twice a day?
Yes. We plan on feeding them twice a day, giving them enrichment. And actually, our plan, you might find in zoos, a lot of the time you won't see natural vegetation inside. It's sort of fake vegetation. And I mean, the reasoning for that is the animals are in that enclosure pretty much all the time. And so they're going to over-groom and kill anything that's there. But at Primates Incorporated, we've been meeting monthly, for the last 3 years and brainstorming on the ways that we can create an optimal indoor environment up here for these guys and then have an outdoor environment, when it's nicer weather out. And so the indoor environment, they basically would have three enclosures. Say, for instance, we have two monkeys that are paired together. We might look at socializing them with two other monkeys, but it depends on dominance and social interactions that we could get from behavioral scoring. But we would have three enclosures so that two enclosures, say it's in the winter, we can't let them outside. Two enclosures, they would dwell, go back and forth between them throughout the day and night. And the other enclosure, with also some naturalistic vegetation, would be allowed to breathe, say for a month or so, to let its vegetation grow back. And then we would let the monkeys dwell between that enclosure and, you know, another one, and let the third enclosure, over-groomed enclosure, be allowed to breathe and grow vegetation. And so we want to keep these monkeys occupied, want to keep them with each other, minimize human interaction, and just simply, you know, implement positive reinforcement training techniques. I tried to do this at the laboratory. For instance, one big example of positive reinforcement is, you know, shifting the monkeys from one enclosure to the other. There's one form which could be dominance by humans using nets and displacement, where you animal care would actually go in the room and displace the monkeys just through their dominance, saying, "I'm the dominant human," and basically scaring them to go into the other enclosure to be blocked off so that animal care can clean that enclosure. Okay, that happens at some zoos and sanctuaries. Other zoos and sanctuaries are doing it differently, where you open the door to the other enclosure, put enrichment in, and allow the monkeys to cooperatively enter that enclosure just out of curiosity. And then they enter that, and then you shut off the enclosure and let animal care clean. So that's sort of an example of, you know, just the articles that we've been reviewing, ways that we will make sure that we're not stressing out these primates, you know, at the sanctuary.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
Oh, good. And it'll definitely be a better environment for them than what they're used to.
Yeah, I mean, being locked up in a cage 98% of the time, that's sad. I know it's necessary, but it's sad.
I know, and actually, we take the we sort of take the middle road, because I have to, you know, of course, communicate with researchers on the benefits of retiring their primates, and certainly if our organization came out against the treatment of primates in research laboratories or primate research in general, we would be labeled as an animal rights divisive organization, and then monkeys would not be retired to a place like that. And so our sort of talking point is, you know, these monkeys, as long as they're being used and housed in research laboratories, the very least we can be doing is providing for their retirement and giving back to them and allowing them to live out the last part of their life with a little bit of dignity.
Yeah.
And a more peaceful environment.
Yeah. Well, I know I love monkeys, and as cute as they are, and as much as I'd like to have a monkey, I never took that leap because I was always told that monkeys don't make good pets. Is that true?
Yes, that is true overall. A lot of the primate sanctuaries, after talking to them and asking them about, you know, how many of their monkeys were pet monkeys, and how many of their monkeys were research monkeys. And the majority of their monkeys are former pet monkeys. And the reason for that is that people get this cute little monkey when it's a baby, and you can do, you know, you can take it wherever you want and sort of train it, bring it up in the human environment. But as you know, monkeys are very social animals. And in the wild, they live in, you know, troops of like 50 to 100 and have very intense social interactions. And so when they're raised in this unnatural environment, when they reach adolescence at about 6 to 8 years of age, they have a tendency to become more aggressive, and they could, if you're taking a monkey out in public, they could bite someone around you or they could bite you, and then that becomes liability. It brings attention to the fact that you own an exotic pet that actually could be harboring disease. such as the herpes B virus. And so the monkey has to go in quarantine. The person they bit has to have their blood drawn and get worried about having this. I mean, because herpes B is fatal in humans. And so it's not like every pet monkey or research monkey has it. But I think the safe thing, like at the sanctuary, we'll treat every monkey as if they have it so that, you know, I can tell the volunteers how to minimize their interactions with the monkeys and make sure that we don't have any bites. But then what happens is it just becomes too much of a liability for the owner of the pet monkey, and then they have to call a sanctuary and basically ask the sanctuary to take this monkey, and no money is provided along with this monkey for retirement, which it has happened with research monkeys as well. You know, the researchers might pay for transportation, and they sort of look at it as they're donating the monkeys to the sanctuary, and we should be thankful, you know, that they're giving us monkeys. But the truth of the matter is that it's expensive to care for these monkeys for the rest of their lives, and the research, the rhesus monkeys can live up to, you know, 29 years in captivity, and if you're talking about $7 to $8 a day to care for them, you know, that's a lot of money that the sanctuary themselves have to raise. And so many sanctuaries right now are very full or near capacity, and they're just raising funds to take care of the monkeys they have. And I've heard cases, the sanctuary I visited in Kentucky is a great sanctuary, but the director said she had to turn away 20 singly housed rhesus monkeys because she didn't have the space or time to socialize these single monkeys. And, you know, sometimes in research they have monkeys that are single housed. And, you know, these monkeys, of course, would be even labeled more as, like, they couldn't be socialized because they've lived their whole life alone and psychotic, and they've become psychotic in a sense. And that seems to be a mentality of some sanctuary directors. I mean, they just simply don't want to take the time to rehab these monkeys, spend all this time, and then maybe have it work out, maybe not. And she just didn't have the time or to socialize them. And now another case was in Florida. The director turned away 35 squirrel monkeys. And, you know, because there's so many monkeys used in research, that many of the sanctuaries are now making the researchers sign sort of this clause, this contract with a clause in it saying that they won't breed any more monkeys into that same type of research that they're doing. And you can imagine with researchers that they're probably pretty stubborn and that they don't want to, that seems a little bit animal rightsy in their eyes. And when I was in the laboratory, boy, they really talked about animal rights activists as ignorant terrorists, you know, and I didn't know any better. I was manipulated to think that, and I think it's easier if you label that, you know, animal rights activity as that, because then you don't have to listen to any criticism. And in fact, you can just toss that criticism aside and write it off as an animal rights crazy is saying this, you know. But so I know that the majority of researchers likely feel that way just because that is what they are taught. And when I resigned from the laboratory and started communicating with, you know, all different types of animal welfare advocates, I was amazed at how, you know, how, like, smart they were. Some were attorneys, and it really led to this huge perspective change in me, and really made me think that the reason why more monkeys aren't being retired, or the reason why their welfare isn't improving faster in the laboratories, is really because the research industry is not listening to animal welfare advocates or animal rights criticisms and how they can fix it. They just become more private and more private. And so anyways, the sanctuary turned away these 35 squirrel monkeys because the researchers wouldn't sign a contract saying they wouldn't breed anymore. And the criticisms from the animal rights groups that we get, and why we can't get more funding from animal welfare organizations, is that they view us as a dumping ground, where we would be this place where researchers would unload their monkeys so that they could breed more. Well, my argument against that is that, you know, it comes back to our main point of how we should be giving back to these monkeys and giving them a better life if they're going to be used in research, and that they deserve a better life regardless of bureaucracy or contracts and this and that, and that, the researchers are just going to kill them to free up their cages to breed more monkeys. And I would much rather see these monkeys get retired. And it's just simply the bureaucracy and lack of funding why monkeys are being turned away. And so if we establish ourselves here in Madison, we can start accepting these out-of-state research monkeys, show that we're successful in what we're doing, and then hope that the Madison community will volunteer with us and then put pressure on the university to say, you know, other research facilities are retiring their primates. You know, why can't you?
Yeah.
So I know that was kind of long, but thank you for allowing me to talk about it. It's just such a complex issue, and it really is frustrating when I hear that research monkeys especially are being turned away and not allowed to be retired presently.
Well, the problem is that the animal rights people and obviously the research laboratories don't like each other, and they won't even hear each other's side. So you're kind of stuck in the middle there, and it's going to be hard for you, but hopefully by you staying on the middle ground, you'll be able to get, like I said, the funds you need to move forward.
And the volunteers that have been signing up with us are just simply people who like animals, you know, and monkey lovers as well. And that's been really great because they're not extreme on either side, and they just are looking to give back to the monkeys just like I am.
Yeah. Well, once your sanctuary is built, will the public be able to visit the sanctuary at all?
Well, it'll be out in the middle of the country, and so basically the public will be allowed to visit because we want to ensure transparency and accountability. And so in order to control the amount of traffic to the sanctuary, we will have it be by appointment only. And then hope that by them seeing the actual sanctuary, they might be more apt to donate. But we're going to try to have, basically, like I said, video surveillance before of all the monkeys, and do sort of a live web stream, video streaming on our website, so that people can go to the website and just view the monkeys there as well. And so that it's not like a zoo where we're constantly having people looking at the monkeys and, you know, they get stressed out by direct eye contact and stuff like that. But a supervised visit, then you really have one-on-one interaction with the visitor and can really explain to them about primate socialization and human interactions with them, you know, what to do, what not to do, what is fearful to a primate, what's a sign of aggression. And, you know, when you look at, if you go to a zoo and you looked at a chimpanzee, for instance, in the eyes, they might lurch forward and do it's called piloerection. Their fur stands out, and they get makes them look tough because they looked at that as a sign of aggression from you. Now we won't have chimpanzees, but monkeys are basically the same way in some sense. And there's just so many more monkeys actually in research facilities than there are chimpanzees. There's only about 1,500 chimpanzees in research facilities, and I really think that is because of Jane Goodall. You know, she really brought a lot of attention to the chimpanzee, and we see how very, very close they are to humans. And unfortunately, I think that there's always going to be that paradox. No matter how close we show that monkeys are to humans, the researchers are always going to say all the more reason to use them. And then the animal welfare, animal rights are always going to say that's the reason why we shouldn't be using them. And I feel like as long as that paradox exists, the only way for us to help the monkeys is by staying in the middle, because I just feel like it's just always going to be at a standstill. But the chimpanzees, there's something called the Chimp Act. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have,
but
yeah.
It's the Chimpanzee Health Improvement Maintenance and Protection Act, and it was enacted towards the end of Clinton's term, and basically it provides federal funding for chimpanzees after they're done in research for their retirement. And Chimp Haven is a chimpanzee sanctuary that is taking some of this federal funding. They're also raising a lot of private funds. And now I was thinking, writing my legislators and, you know, having them start providing funding for these monkeys, because monkeys are not that far away from chimpanzees, you know. So if chimpanzees are deserving this funding for retirement, certainly the monkeys should follow.
I agree.
However, yeah, and, you know, I would have paralleled that a long time ago. However, there is one clause in the Chimp Act that raises a red flag to a lot of folks, and that is that if federal funding is provided, the chimpanzee's retired, that if a bioterrorism scare comes along and then all of a sudden the researchers want every primate ever retired back, they can take them back if they are federally funded for their retirement. So there is that stipulation that they could be called back in the research. Now, there's a primate control group that was sort of established to just make sure that the primate supply of the researchers is in short and the monkeys wouldn't, you know, the chimps wouldn't be called back in the research. So it hasn't happened to my knowledge yet. But it's sort of a control of the government that I don't want over us. I just want to have private funding to provide for these monkeys so that, you know, Primates Incorporated can provide permanent lifetime care to them without having the chance that they might have to go back to a species inadequate environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the shock of that would be horrible.
Yes, to give them a natural environment and then take that away from them, it's almost parallels in my mind taking a primate from the wild and bringing them into research.
Right. Well, I know people are going to want to help and support your efforts. What are some ways that people can help out?
Well, right now we have a lot of virtual opportunities simply for the fact that we don't have an actual sanctuary. But if you go to our website, www.primatesinc.com, we have a volunteer page where it outlines the volunteer position descriptions, which consist of document editing. For my grant editing, I prefer to have four people review and add their insights to make sure that we have a compelling case, follow directions, and that it's well written. And then we have internet research duties, where we're looking for, you know, rich and famous people with addresses that we can, you know, send to their managers. and we're looking for foundations. And, you know, you know how it is on the internet. You could just be on there all day. And so it's just really nice for me to have volunteers to do specific internet research duties. And then that helps us send out more letters per month and just increase the odds that we'll run into funding. And basically, 50% of our campaign, I'm expecting to come from three or four large donations, and the other 50% from the public in small donations. And, like, I know it can happen. It's just a matter of getting there. So folks, you know, anyone can volunteer from a remote location if they have, you know, internet access, email access, and Microsoft Word to compile their research findings. So.
And as far as funding goes, they can go to your website and donate directly, or you've got a great online auction going on right now, right?
Yes, and when you go to our website, primatethink.com, you can click on the auction link. And I've gotten donations, about 70 donations from artists, businesses, Primates Incorporated, volunteers. And so, you know, we're looking to raise hopefully about $5,000 from this, and anyone can bid on these items, and then we'll ship them to them. And it goes until the end of September.
Okay. So how can people get in touch with you and keep up with your progress?
Yes, please send any comments to me. My email is on the website. It's amy@primatethink.com. They can contact me by that, and then, you know, we can go from there.
Okay. Do y'all have a newsletter yet or anything like that?
Oh, thank you for asking. Actually, we are a very flatly run organization where we've been meeting monthly, and it's basically like writing a term paper every month. I write up the meeting summary, our article summaries, compile our input, and then I post them on our website. So under meeting summaries, you can pretty much download any meeting that we've had since January of 2004.
Oh, that's great.
You know, anyone that's looking to start up a nonprofit of their own or is concerned about primate welfare and enrichment, you can go to these meeting summaries and read through them, and I guarantee you, you'll learn a lot. And if you are starting up a nonprofit or want to start up a primate sanctuary in the future, you know, we can only provide retirement to 75 monkeys, and that's not even the tip of the iceberg. So we want to have smaller community-run primate sanctuaries around the country so that, you know, a sanctuary doesn't get overrun with 400 primates. All of a sudden can't afford to take care of them all, and then these primates have to be shifted to other sanctuaries and that are already pretty full. So if we could keep this at a low number, and then, I mean, I really want to become established so that we can inspire other people in their communities to start a community-run primate sanctuary themselves. And by looking at our meeting summaries, they will be able to knock two or three years off of their business plan. I can guarantee that.
Well, that would be helpful.
Yes.
Well, you're doing a wonderful thing, Amy, and I wish you the best of luck. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So go visit the website, folks. It's www.primatesinc.com. You've been listening to All God's Creatures Pet Podcast, Great and Small. We love them all.